Yes, I love it.
Sweet, he's giving me 300 boxes of grape nuts flakes.
Friends anybody ever had. And it's funny, but I feel as if I've known you all the time.
I love music, good music, but not swing. I sing.
Hi, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Each week, we will dive into a certain star and talk to some people who know much about him. I'm Kate, your host, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Hope you enjoy it. Hi, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Today's episode is Jane Wyman. Today, we will be talking with Shay Hyland, a researcher on Jane Wyman. I hope that you enjoy the podcast.
Shay!
Hey, girlie.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I'm excited.
I'm excited too. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm like really stoked about this. I think a lot of people are excited too from what I've seen.
Yeah, this is going to be a really good episode. I think a lot of people have been anticipating it. Yeah. Say what?
I said strap in, everyone.
Oh, yes.
It's going to be wild.
Absolutely. So you are our Jane Wyman expert.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about her.
Well, I hope you have a lot of time.
I do.
Here all day.
Yes, we have quite a bit of time, actually, which is really good. And so I'd like to start off asking you about when and where she was born and about her childhood, if you could give us the lowdown on that.
I can totally give you the lowdown. Okay, are you ready?
Yes.
I just wanted to briefly say that at some point in this podcast, we're just going to like flash up a trigger warning. We're probably going to be talking lightly about rape and also about Ronald Reagan. That's also another trigger warning too. That's really scary.
Yeah,
just to preface that.
Yes, I saw your tweet about Ronald Reagan, and I was like, it doesn't matter, sis. You can roast him all you want.
Yeah, that's not what I'm here for today. Any other day, I will. Okay, so my girly Jane, she was born on January 5th in St. Joseph, Missouri. Oh, in 1917. Mm-hmm. And her real name is Sarah Jane Mayfield, and she was named after her birth father's sister. And her parents were super young when they had her. I think they were both like 21 or 22.
Oh my.
And they had married only like not even the year before. So I think they like conceived her before they actually got married. So they were young and both working, and, you know, raising her as young parents,
mm-hmm.
and they, unfortunately, they divorced in 1921,
mm.
and that kind of sent Jane's mom over the edge a little bit. Like, she couldn't handle raising a young child on her own,
mm.
and you know, just dealing with that. So, unfortunately, her mom, Gladys, kind of dropped her off at the elderly neighbor's house and said, I can't do this anymore. I'm out. So, yeah, Jane was pretty much left at the doorstep of her elderly neighbors.
Mm.
And they took her in, and they fostered her, and they were already kind of, you know, pretty old. They were in, like, their late 60s.
Oh, my God.
Three. I know. So they fostered her. She took their last name. And she was pretty much raised by them. Her birth mom was out of the picture. And she looked up to these two people as her actual parents to raise her. It was very sad.
So, what about her dad? Her dad didn't want to come back into the picture?
Her dad actually died.
Oh, okay.
A year after they divorced in 1921, her dad works for a railroad company, and from what I understand, he died like in an actual railroad accident.
Oh, okay.
In San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So dad was out of the picture, mom was out of the picture, and you know, these two elderly people just took her in, and they already had kids that they raised, and they were out of the house, and
mm-hmm.
they just did what they felt was right. I mean, if a kid shows up at your doorstep, I think I would try and make that kid feel loved.
Feel loved too. So were they Wyman?
No. Okay, so their names were Richard and Emma Folks. And so she changed her last name to Folks. So it was Sergine Folks.
Okay.
And she got the name Wyman from her first marriage. I believe it was in like 1933.
Okay. Okay. So we'll Wyman. Okay, so we'll get into that. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
So
much about that.
Yeah, so she was basically a poor orphaned and foster kid.
Yeah, and so she was about, like, I don't know, I want to say, like, 16, no, let me backtrack. When she was 11, her foster father died, and her foster mom and her, they went to L.A. to try and get Jane into films. She loved singing. That was her number one thing. All she wanted to do was sing. And they lived there briefly in L.A., but nothing came of it.
Oh.
So they moved back, and she actually apparently got a job as a radio singer, which I haven't seen any information on that, like, other than it being in books and stuff, but there's not much depth to it, so I don't know if that's true or not. And so that's what she did. She worked as a radio singer as a young kid, and when she was 16, she dropped out of high school and moved to LA on her own. And this was like around the like the Depression, so like early Depression, so like, I don't know, like 1929, she moved out, and she went to LA, and she worked at a coffee shop and sent money back to her foster mom, because she was so old, you know, that she couldn't work, so Jane just went to work and tried to make it into films, and sending her money on the side.
What a sweetheart. Yes.
I know.
What a sweetheart. I mean, she seems like she was so selfless, like, working
always selfless.
Just working and sending it back home to,
not only her mom, but supporting someone that, you know, took care of her and gave her a roof over her head.
Did she ever meet her birth mother?
Well, I mean, she knew her, like, when she was very little, but I don't think that Jane had any, like, memory of her. I don't think they rekindled anything. I think that was it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
And when she was, when Jane was in elementary school, it's kind of like a side topic, since her mom was elderly, or her foster mom was elderly, she was dressed in, like, awful clothes, you know?
Yeah.
She wore, like, these big, clunky black shoes, ugly pigtails, ugly dresses, and Jane was made fun of for it. Like, people were picking on her because she had an old mom, and she just looked like a little doll, like an ugly rag doll. And so that, I feel like part of that trauma in her childhood and, like, bullying and that kind of thing just carried on into her adulthood. So having that struggle when she was little, just, it carried with her for the rest of her life.
God bless her, seriously.
I love that girl.
Yes. So let's talk about her early work, like her early films when she got into Hollywood. So did she change her name to Jane?
Yes. So she went by Jane when she finally like started searching for like movie opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
She ditched the singing thing and she was like, I'm pretty good at dancing, so let's try some dancing roles.
Mm-hmm.
And so she lived in LA for about 2 or 3 years before she actually landed her first role, which was actually The Kid from Spain in 1932 with mm-hmm. the Golden Girls.
Mm.
So, and I listened to the other podcast, so, you know, that was like Betty Grable, Paula Goddard, like all those girls were there too.
Yes.
But Jane was, I can't find her. She's not in any of the pictures, but she is in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's basically what she did. She was working as a chorus girl for years. Like 4 years she was dancing in chorus films. And actually, she was a dancer in 16 films before she landed her first, like, speaking role, which was in Stage Struck in 1936.
Oh.
And, yeah, it actually, her first speaking role was supposed to be in My Man Godfrey,
uh-huh.
which is a super popular movie. And she had lines, and she was, like, rehearsing for it. She was so excited. And they cut it out of the film. But you can still see her. She's in there. She's in it.
Mm. But she doesn't have any lines, though.
No, she doesn't have any lines, but you can still see her, like, in the background as an extra.
Mm.
And so she still continued to be an extra. And overall, like, just as in, like, extra work, she did 21 films. Before getting a credited role.
Wow.
Which is a long time. And she got that in 1937 in Smart Blonde, which was actually the first of the Torchy Blaine series with
uh-huh.
Michael Farrell.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, Jane ended up playing Torchy in the very last Torchy movie. So that's kind of like a full circle moment for her to have her first speaking role, or her first credited role, I should say, in that movie, and then get so popular that she actually takes over and ends such a popular series.
Hmm. I never heard of the Torchy series.
It's really good. It's good. It was played by Glenda Farrell, and then I believe Rosemary Lane did one.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jane finished it off.
Oh.
Yeah.
How interesting.
I know.
So, what was Jane's first movie?
Her very first movie, as in, like, overall, would
yeah.
be the Kid from Spain.
Kid from Spain.
And then, yeah. And then as soon as she did Smart Blonde, that mm-hmm. was when she started doing her speaking roles. And when she finally got, like, her, I don't know, I guess her, like, big girl contract with Warner Brothers,
mm-hmm.
they dyed her hair blonde, she put on lots of makeup and eyelashes, and she was just cranking out movies. She was a loud, cocky blonde. That pretty much, that was her brand. She just played a loudmouth blonde.
So she
and
wasn't
a lot of people. What was that?
I was gonna say. So she wasn't a natural blonde.
No. She was brunette, and she had really curly hair.
Okay. Now yeah. what were you saying? I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
It's okay. I just saying that, like, in her early film, she played like a loud, you know, big mouth blonde, and not a lot of people know that. Like, they see Jane and they see her more, like, dramatic roles and her more, like, quiet, I guess, more toned-down roles. And they don't realize that in her early days, that's all that she was known for, is just mm-hmm. being, like, over-the-top and loud, kind of like a glamour girl.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I love it.
It is cool.
Okay, and now we're going to talk about one of her iconic films, Johnny Belinda.
Johnny Belinda.
Yeah, that movie can hit you right in the feels, girl. I'm telling you. Yes. Yes.
Oh my goodness.
I love Johnny Belinda. Are you kidding? I mean, every time I watch that movie, I'm like, get that Oscar, girl. Oh, yes, wait, you got it. Ma'am? You got it. Yes, ma'am.
Totally. Okay. Well, I guess I should backtrack a little bit before I officially get started on Johnny Belinda. Because, like I was saying, she was only known for those, like, kind of kooky comedy roles, like, as a blonde. That something like Johnny Belinda to get to that point, no one really would have believed her in a role like that. So in about like 1945, she had her role in The Lost Weekend, and that was when she went back to brunette, and that was her very first like serious dramatic role. And you know, like the main character, he was alcoholic, and he was dealing with, like, mental health issues. So it was super dark and dramatic, and a lot of people just did not see Jane in that role. They just couldn't imagine it, because they only knew her as one way. And even then, like, on, like, movies like The Yearling.
Yes.
She was playing Ma Baxter, which was such an iconic role for that year. Like, everyone was auditioning for that. And everyone was talking about it. Everyone wanted it. And they gave it to Jane. And even Gregory Peck, who was her co-star in that film, told her on set, he was like, I have no idea, like, how you landed this role, because when they told me that you were going to play it, I was like, how did you get this role? It just doesn't make sense to me. And so the director literally showed him The Lost Weekend and was like, that's why she got this role. Like, she can do it, believe me.
Yearling is such a good movie too.
Yeah, it's so good. And actually, with The Yearling, she was working with Warner Brothers, and she was also working with MGM at the time, which she was not under contract with. And she was working on Night and Day, which was a flashy musical. It wasn't very good. It was kind of awful, actually. She did those simultaneously. Like, she would work on The Yearling in the morning, and then drive to the other studio and go play Night and Day with her, like, big fancy gowns and her curly hair and makeup. And she would just go back and forth, you know, changing from, you know, dramatic to her, like, little fairy princess role. And it's just so sad that, like, you know, she wanted these dramatic roles, but it took a while for people to fully accept her.
Yeah, to take her seriously.
Yeah. So when she landed Johnny Belinda, people knew that that was going to be, like, peak of her career. Like, they knew that she was going to do it right and basically have, like, the best movie of her career.
It was one of the best movies of her career, because she doesn't say anything. She signs the entire time.
She does. So, she basically, she got the role of Johnny Belinda, and she prepared for about 5 months, learning sign language, reading lips. She actually went and donated her time, and, you know, she wanted to, like, help out with charities and stuff and understand, like, deaf culture. So she worked with a lot of, like, children's schools for the deaf. and
wow.
she would help out with these kids, and really she wanted to learn, like, she wanted to fully learn it. She didn't just mm-hmm. want to, you know, wing it and, you know, not do it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she prepared for that role for 5 months, and actually in the process, she did lose a child, so that was very traumatic for her, mm. and I think it, unfortunately, it kind of helped her make the role more dramatic and more impactful,
yeah.
because she was going through that. Basically, mm-hmm. She lost her daughter, and then I want to say maybe like a month or so after, the studio was like, okay, like, get back to work, you know, no time to grieve, we gotta shoot this movie.
Mm.
So they actually did it on location in Mendocino, which is up here, like, in Northern California.
Oh, okay.
Very beautiful. And it's a super small town. It was a huge deal. All of the local people in Mendocino, like, got to play extras, and it was, like, all over their, like, newspapers and stuff. Everyone was super pumped about it. Like, Jay Myman is coming to town.
Get your bags ready, girl.
Yeah, literally. So when they were filming, Jane learned everyone's lines. Hmm. She had, like, wax inserts put in her ear, like little molds, mm-hmm. so that she literally could not hear. She could not hear any sound. She couldn't hear what the director was saying. She couldn't hear what, like, her co-stars were saying to her.
Hmm.
And she would read their lips. And so at some points in the movies, you'll realize that they'll, like, touch her arm, or they'll like, look at her, like, to kind of cue her, like, I'm finished talking, and, you know, now's your cue. So that's what made part of that performance so genuine, is because she really went, like, full force, like,
above and beyond,
and she really just wanted to make it the best that it could be. And actually, that movie is the very first, like, full feature film to highlight sign language, and it is also one of the first to discuss the topic of rape. And it's not something where it's like, what's that movie? I think it's, oh god, is it Babyface?
Oh,
I don't know. There's a Barbara Stanwyck movie where they, like, mention rape or something, or there's, like, something going on, and it's only hinted at, and I know that, like, the Hays Code and everything.
I think it was Babyface.
Something happened in that, but it's yeah. it was always suggested. It was mm-hmm. it was never like, la-di-da, we're going in the closet, you know?
Yeah.
But, so, it, at the time, like, this was a big deal, because you actually saw that for what it was. Like, it ruined her life. Like, she was depressed. This character was just really going through it, and you saw it for how disgusting and vile, like, an act like that is, and how it can affect someone. In general, even if she didn't have a disability, like, that is still so awful for someone to walk through. But her being deaf and mute on top of that, and having her whole town just kind of shun her and think that, you know, oh, she's awful, let's shame her.
Mm-hmm.
It just absolutely incredible film. And you know what, she deserved that Oscar. She deserved it.
She got it. When you watch it, you're just like, oh my god, this is an incredible performance, and oh my lord, like, what is this?
I mean, you can really tell with, like, her facial expressions and everything, that just what she can't say with, like, her voice, she can say it with her face. You know, you can really just mm-hmm. tell that she worked so hard to make that like 100%. And when she was actually at the Academy Awards, she was up against a lot of competition. It was Irene Dunne for I Remember Mama, which was, oh, girl, I cry.
Yes.
And I think it was The Snake Pit with Olivia
De Havilland. Mm-hmm. She was nominated.
There's so many other ones, too. And Jane was actually sitting there at the Oscars thinking, I'm not going to win. And so she's at her table just chilling out. And she said that her table was behind Irene Dunne. And she said that she was so busy watching Irene Dunne, waiting for them to announce her name, like thinking that Irene's gonna win. She's got this in the bag. And so when Jane's name got called, she didn't hear it. She was so focused on Irene Dunne, thinking, that's my girl, she's gonna win it. And everyone at her table was like, Jane, you won. And she was like, oh, what? And so she sat up. And she had her purse in her lap, and literally everything in her purse just fell on the floor. And if you watch the actual clip of her winning, when she stands up and walks away, you can see everyone at her table dive down under the table to like pick up her stuff for her purse. It was so cute.
I can just imagine that. I haven't seen the footage, but I intend to see it because I...
It's on YouTube.
Oh, is it?
Actually, what was that?
It is?
It is on YouTube.
Okay.
And when she won, she had... I think she... I'm pretty sure. Don't clock me on this. She has the shortest acceptance speech for Best Actress. I think it was a record at one time. What did she say? She said, I accept this very gratefully for keeping my mouth shut once. I think I'll do it again. And she walked off. Cute and sweet.
Just dropped the mic.
Just left it at that. Why not?
She just dropped the mic.
Unexpected for her. She was not expecting to win that at all.
Yeah, and another great movie that I really want to mention was Magnificent Obsession.
Ooh, girl, that one's good too. Not my favorite, but it's still good.
Yeah.
That one, she also has, she has an accident, and her character goes blind. And it's about her husband dying and... You know, this poor widow who is now blind, trying to get her sight back, and she meets this doctor. I think he's a doctor.
Yeah.
Rock Hudson,
yeah, he's a doctor.
And he's actually the one, he's the reason why her husband died. It's a weird dynamic, but they end up falling in love. But that one too, I mean, just another role that Jane, you know, wanted to play it so authentically, playing a blind person. You can even see that a lot of people who do know blind people think it's kind of corny and not a good role or not a good portrayal, but you know what, it was the times, I guess. I think she did a slam dunk job.
Yes.
And those sunglasses.
Yeah, are to die
those
for.
Those sunglasses. Those are cute.
Yes, ma'am. They are.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, if you think about it, so you got Johnny Belinda, Magnificent Obsession, and she also was in The Glass Menagerie, where that character also has a disability. And those roles just played a factor in, like, even Jane's humanitarian work. Like, she really wanted to advocate for these people. She went and spent time with these organizations she helped with the deaf people. She helped with the blind people. Anybody that was dealing with even like childhood arthritis. Like, she went and she donated her time and her money, and she volunteered for these organizations, and that's how she wanted to give back. Like, I think playing these roles, and like you said, she is a very selfless person, mm-hmm. Just giving of her time, that's all that she really wanted to do. Like, yeah, I have a career, but this is more of what I want to be remembered for, mm-hmm. is all of her humanitarian work.
Did she ever get in any awards for her humanitarian work?
You know what? It is funny that you say that. She did. She received the Debbie Reynolds, the Thaliens Award, mm-hmm. that Debbie Reynolds had. They had, like, that huge, gala thing. Mm. And I believe that the Arthritis Foundation actually has a Jane Wyman Award, like, named after her.
Oh.
Because she also suffered from arthritis herself.
Oh.
And so now the organization has an award in her name for people that, you know, really step forward and are contributing and giving of their time and energy. They had, I forget the name of it, but I do actually own one of her humanitarian awards. I won it at the Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher estate auction.
Oh!
And so now I have this huge plaque I don't know what to do with, but it says Jane Wyman Humanitarian.
Hey!
I know. It's kind of ugly, but you know what? Jane owned it. Debbie Reynolds owned it. I will take it.
Yes. So I was going to ask, besides the plaque, do you own anything of Jane's?
Aside from autographs and stuff like that, I don't know. What do I have? I have, like, her tax form. Does that count?
Yes.
I don't know if I should have that or not, but don't tell anyone.
I won't.
I just have a lot of autographs, and that's pretty much it. There hasn't been anything that has been Jane's, like maybe like jewelry or clothing or something like that, that I have seen that's been available for purchase. Unfortunately, I wish there was, because I would be the first person to buy it.
Oh, I bet you would, sis. I mean, you are the Jane. Every time that I think of you, or every time I see Jane Wyman, I immediately think of you.
Good thing, though, that I don't have any competition. There's not many people that are hooting and hollering over Jane Wyman.
No.
I am alone on this hill.
Yes, and good. Like, I'm a Jane Wyman fan. I love her. I don't know. You know, like I said, I knew nothing little to nothing about her. Would you tell us about going to her house?
Oh, girl. Yes. I didn't know that we were going to talk about it, but I will tell you about it.
Please.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so, how many years has it been? I think it's been 2 years. I was really into my Jane research, like, crazy, like, all day, every day.
Yes.
But now with a full-time job, I'm a little bit busy. So I saw on Instagram, actually, I'm always looking through the Jane Wyman hashtag,
mm-hmm.
and I saw that it was a picture of her house, and I was like, huh, that's weird, like, I've never seen a beautiful HD, like, high-res picture of her house, and I clicked on it,
yeah,
and it was a realtor. And they announced that they were selling her home in Beverly Hills for like $7 million or something like that. And I know.
Who has that type of money, especially in California? Me too.
I would have bought it.
Yeah.
And so you know, I liked the picture, and I knew that I had, like, photographs of Jane at this house, and I just wanted to reach out, and I contacted the realtor, and I was like, hey, like, I have pictures of Jane at this house, and he was like, oh, that is so awesome, and he actually invited me to go take a tour of the house, and I was very broke at the time. And you know what? Something in me was like, when is this opportunity ever going to happen to me again? Like, when is it? It's not.
Probably so never.
I worked at my little pizza place job. I saved up all my tips. I smiled for the gentleman. I was like, I will do anything to get these tips. And I just saved up, and I bought a plane ticket to LA, and it's not even that expensive, but I mean, I really didn't have any money. And I booked a flight, and I planned on literally just flying from San Francisco to LA, taking a tour of the house, and leaving. Like, I wasn't going to do anything else, just an hour flight there, an hour flight back, and see it for myself. And I emailed the pictures that I had of Jane at this house. And when I got there, the realtor had, like, staged, he, like, printed out all the pictures and framed them and put them in the locations where they were taken. So, like, there's a picture of her looking over, like, sketches, like costume sketches, in front of her fireplace. And he framed it, and he actually put it in front of the fireplace, so it really, like, it gave you a sense of, like, I don't know
who owned the house.
Yeah, and you really get to, like, see her and envision her life there. And the thing that bothered me about this whole house thing was that they were really pushing the fact that Ronald Reagan had lived there.
Oh, and God. He, we'll get to that train wreck in a minute.
Yeah, of course we will, girl. but it bothered me because he didn't really live there at all. It was Jane's house.
Yeah, like, she purchased it. She bought it.
She purchased that house, and unfortunately, that's just what people do, is they tag his name on to anything that she's associated with. And I made it a point when I wrote a blog post about it. I don't blog, but I wrote a blog post about it. And I made it a point to only mention that Jane lived at that house. I didn't want to be rude to anyone. I didn't want to deny anything, but, like, I know that he didn't live there, and it was just an unfortunate circumstance of Jane's career and what's left.
Yeah, of course.
They always just got to tack his name on.
Oh, that
was beautiful. It was literally, like, everything that I had hoped and dreamed it would be. The owner that was selling the house actually bought it directly from Jane. The person that bought it was a fan of hers. And so in, like, I don't know, I think it was, like, 1956, maybe. I forget the dates. But they literally knocked on her door, and they were like, hi, I'm a huge fan of yours, and when you want to move out, I will buy this house from you. And they gave her a phone number, and when Jane was ready to leave, she gave them a call, and they literally bought the house from Jane, and they kept that house the exact same way that Jane had lived in it in the 50s. So all the handrails were original, all the walls were original. It was like luxurious, like, padded walls. Like, my dad's mowing the lawns outside. That's so irritating. I told him to be quiet. Hopefully you can't hear it.
Nope, I can't hear it at all, so it's okay.
Okay, good. They're just irritating me. but, so, like, walls were like super lush. Like you felt like you were living that like glamorous 50s like lifestyle. It felt like a time capsule home. Like the closet was floor to ceiling like mirrors, and the handles were beautiful, like clear acrylic flowers, and like the bathroom was gorgeous. It was all just so like it felt like I was stepping into her life. Like it felt like an absolute dream.
Mm-hmm.
It was unreal.
Yeah.
I was literally touching everything I could. I was like, ooh, Jane might have touched this doorknob. Ooh, this light switch. I was a creep, and I even, like, poked around in the closets, too. It was bad. You gotta do what you gotta do sometimes.
Absolutely, but at least you got a chance to go and see a piece of history.
Yeah, that's true. They used that house for the outside shots of the show Feud, Betty and Joan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they used that for the exterior shots.
I did not know that.
Until I was like, I was watching that episode and I was like, wait, this looks familiar. Like, I've seen this before. That was our house. Isn't that crazy?
That's great. That's amazing. I did not know they would even think to use Jane Wyman's house. I hope they knew who the house was.
I think there was no one living in it at the time.
Okay.
I think the family like let them rent it.
Do you know if anybody lives in it now?
Yeah, it was sold they actually sold it for under the asking price, but the person that was selling the house made sure, well, he said that he did, he really wanted them to preserve it and, like, not do anything crazy, like, demolish it. So, it's still there, luckily.
Okay,
that's important.
Absolutely, for sure. I know Jobina Ralston's house is still in Toluca Lake, but on Zillow it says it was made in 2002, and I'm like, girl, it was made in 1938. Jobina had it built. Yeah, I was like, it was made in 1938, sis. And when I looked inside, it kind of looked the same as it did in the 30s, but they had upgraded it. They had updated it a lot, so. They probably renovated it at some point, but the fact that it said it was built in 2002, and I'm like, no, sis. No, dear.
It was not, sis. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about these marriages, because I know she married a few times.
Let's
talk about the first one.
I know y'all want this to be a roast. That'll be another day, I promise.
Honey, you can roast them all you want. I mean, seriously, please do. I'm down. Like, I'm down for that. I mean, no Ronald Reagan fans here.
Separate episode for this.
Say what?
I said we gotta make a whole separate episode for this.
Oh my God! Yes.
I have to be patient and hold my tongue. I can't. Hold my tongue? Bite my tongue? Hold my breath? I don't know.
I think it's bite my tongue.
Bite my tongue? I don't even know these expressions.
I know, but you can roast him a little bit in this episode, because if you don't, most people are going to think that their marriage was all cats and roses and roses and cream.
Ew.
And their marriage was anything but roses and cream.
Ugh, it was gross.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about this first marriage. So, who was she married to?
So she was married in 1933.
Uh-huh.
Right? Yeah. She was married to Ernest Wyman. And that's where she got the Wyman last name, in 1933.
Okay.
They were married from 1933 until 1935. Mm. I don't have any information on him. He was just like a salesman or something.
Uh-huh.
and that's that. And she was pretty young. I think on the marriage certificate or something, she said that she was 19. She was not 19.
No.
And then she married again in 1937 to Myron Futterman. What an awful last name.
Futterman, I agree.
Ugh, gross. And he was a clothing manufacturer.
Uh-huh.
Again, I don't know how she's meeting these fools, but it is what it is.
She's just not having a good marriage life at all, sis.
Yeah. I mean, if you're living like a not so good life and maybe a rich man comes along, I think she jumped at the opportunity to get married and maybe have some stability, but didn't work out.
Jesus.
I know. So... Yeah, and then, here we go. She met Ronald Reagan.
She met Reagan,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Yes.
You know what? I will say this. It does also bother me that every time Jane Wyman is mentioned, they have to tack his sorry ass's name on it, too.
Exactly.
It's like she was more than just Ronald Reagan's wife, ho. She was more than that. She actually had a career.
I have taught you well, girl.
Yes, you have. But it's so funny because I was like reading about her last night, and I was looking at pictures of her, and they're like, Ronald Reagan's wife, Jane Wyman. I'm like, Ronald Reagan.
It is always the ex Mrs. Reagan.
Yes.
Ronald Reagan's ex-wife.
Yep.
It's
never about Jane freaking Wyman. It's never, she's never a person on her own. She's always having to have his sorry ass's name tacked onto her name.
Exactly, and that's why I felt as like so lame. I felt like called to give her that spotlight, you know? Because when Nancy Reagan died, I was already kind of familiar with Jane. I wasn't like full on, you know, crazy about her. Like I was just familiar with her. I had seen her in a few things. I thought she was cute.
Mm-hmm.
And when Nancy died, all these articles were coming out and mentioning Jane, like, the first Mrs. Reagan.
Always the first Mrs. Reagan.
What is this? Like,
she wasn't.
What is that?
Yeah, like, he wasn't.
You don't even call, like, I don't know, Angelina Jolie, like, the ex Mrs. Brad Pitt. Like, who does that?
Right.
Like, what is wrong with you? Or, like, Elizabeth Taylor. You don't call her the ex Mrs. Richard Burton.
Nope.
No one does that.
Nope.
They have their own names and their own careers.
Except Jane!
Why is Jane the exception?
I don't know. Maybe
absolutely no sense to me.
I think maybe because he was president at some point in time and he was governor at some point in time. And I think he was like a political person at some point in time. Who gives a shit at this point? Like, I'm already tired. Yeah, like, girl, I'm already tired. Ugh, I'm exhausted. Bye, girl. But...
Yeah.
He just, like, I think it's because of that whole political power and, like, about, like, oh, you know, he married Jane Wyman first, cool, whatever. But Jane Wyman, I bet you anything, when she was getting older, she was like, oh, God, what? I gotta be tacked onto this sorry ass, are you kidding me?
Exactly.
Why do they keep attaching my name to this hoe? I don't understand this.
We haven't even, like, talked about their marriage yet. We're just roasting them. but when they were already divorced, and this was like in like the 80s, she was offered some ridiculous amount of money. Like, I think it was like $250,000 or something just to talk about him. And she was like, I'm not doing it. Like, I don't have the time. I don't have the energy. If you're looking for me having something negative to say, like, look somewhere else. Like,
yeah.
As much as I wish that she did have bitterness towards him, you know, but Jane's not the kind of person to really talk negatively, and especially after after her daughter dying, she really changed as a person, and she just wanted to be free and be positive, and you know, just not hold grudges.
Yeah, because she had two other kids, right?
Yes, she did. I guess we can talk about what they did.
Yes.
So she met Ron when they were filming Brother Rat, which came out in like 1938, and she's freshly divorced for the second time, and he was the new kid on the block, you know, a little bit dorky, and a lot of people say that, you know, she pursued him, whatever. Anyway, they get married, and it was a huge deal. Like, everyone was talking about it. Like, they're like the Hollywood love story, you know?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And all the articles, all the magazines were talking about it. And so when they got married in 1940, and they had a daughter, Maureen, on January 4th in 1941, the day before Jane's birthday. And actually, a lot, because of, you know, how Hollywood reporters and magazine people go about things, they always want to make something a story. So for a very long time, these newspaper people were saying that Jane had Maureen on her birthday, which would make Jane's birthday January 4th.
Yeah.
And so everyone thought that Jane's birthday was January 4th, and it's not. It's January 5th. It was just because people were trying to make a story out of it, you know?
Yeah.
The day before. It can't be the day before. It has to be the day of.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they had their daughter, and they adopted their son Michael, I believe in 1945 or 1946.
Okay.
So
Maureen wasn't adopted.
No.
Okay.
No, she wasn't.
Okay, that's I don't know, cuz I always thought, like, cuz I know she had lost a daughter. She had lost I don't know what her name was.
Christine. Was her name.
Christine.
Yes,
okay.
That was after they adopted Michael.
Okay.
Yeah, so they had Maureen, and then they adopted their son Michael, and that was when Ron was with like the Screen Actors Guild, and he was kind of exposing people, you know, communism. Ooh, scary. So he was really at that time, he was getting politically active, and he was kind of shifting his focus in other directions besides acting, because at this point Jane was on her way up in Hollywood, and he was on the decline.
Yeah, she was making a lot more money, and back then if the wife was making a lot more money than he was, oh, what an ego turn that would have been.
Yeah, and I, like, again, I have only seen like a handful of Ron movies. I haven't even seen...
I've seen three.
Stupid one everyone talks about. I don't even know.
King's Row is one of them.
Yeah, that one.
Now, that one, I will admit...
Careless.
Yeah. That one, I will admit, it's only because I love Robert Cummings, who's in it, and Sheridan. That movie is very good. But his character is annoying. I will guarantee you that much.
He is annoying, just in general.
Drag him, sis.
Too good.
No.
And Jane really wanted to hold on to this because she has two kids involved in this, and she doesn't want to end up like her own mom, you know? Like, once there's kids involved, like, it's a whole different story.
Yeah.
She's now established, and she has a career, and she doesn't want this to end in a bad way. But with Ron, just all of his stuff, you know, she wanted to maybe like, let's try for another child, and maybe that will be the thing that we need to save this, because it was not going well. Jane didn't want to be a part of the Screen Actors Guild. Jane didn't want to be a part of these meetings, and she didn't want to have to go to all these court meetings and everything that he was basically dragging her into. Like, she's just being the supportive wife. She just, whatever. She's doing what she needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was pregnant, and with all of this stuff that was going on, I think it was so much stress on her that it actually led to her losing the baby prematurely. I mean, she was, I think like 2 or 3 months early.
Oh my God.
Ron wasn't even there. He was not there to be there.
Seriously?
In the hospital. He was not there. He actually, I think part two was he was very sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he actually got her sick, and that also factored into this whole situation. And so she was alone for the whole thing, and he wasn't there, not a part of it. And their daughter Christine only lived for like an hour, and that was that. And it was so traumatic and awful for Jane that she literally, she just became a whole different person. And you can tell, I mean,
mm-hmm.
from, and so that's like, also, like I said, it factored into Johnny Belinda.
Mm-hmm.
From Johnny Belinda on,
mm-hmm.
those roles that she played, she has no makeup, she's simple, she's still very, you know, very much Jane.
Mm-hmm.
But everything before then, like, you can tell that there was a shift in her, like, career-wise and, like, personally. Like, that was how she got into her faith. Like, it really just all around changed her. She focused her time and her energy into her kids and her faith, and that's where it was for her. Like, losing her daughter, like, she had to live with that for the rest of her life, and she never let it go. She never healed from it.
Mm.
And that part of Ron not being there, like, really factored into their divorce. She could not cope with it. She just couldn't let it go.
Yeah.
And Ron was just, you know, he was telling her to move on. You know, you gotta move on from this.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't tell someone who lost a child to move on.
No, it's one thing if you lose a parent very early. But when you lose a child, like, when you lose a parent, you're an orphan. But there is no word for when you lose a child, because it's not supposed to happen.
Yeah, and especially, like, being a woman and, like, walking through that and just mm-hmm. not having the support from your partner.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine, like, what her mental state was like. Like, I know that she struggled with anxiety and sleepwalking and being, she would literally wake up in the middle of the night and be like panicking. She couldn't breathe. Like, she just became so, like, she was living on the edge, basically, like, for a very long time. And then she got into her faith, and that really changed her. And I'm not a religious person at all.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, whatever, but I really do believe that is what got her out of it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So who was the last person she married?
Oh, that dude.
Was he bad too?
Again, I don't know much about him because I really don't care.
Uh-huh.
Again, you know, I just wanted, like, when I do my research and I talk about Jane, I want the focus to be on her.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that, like, I don't look at it, I guess. But he, so her last marriage ended up being her, her last marriage twice. She married this fool twice.
Are you kidding?
I'm not kidding.
Oh my God.
She married Fred Karger. She was a musician, actually. And she married him in 1952. Mm-hmm. And it was very scandalous because he was, I think he was younger than her, first off. Mm-hmm. And kind of very similar to, like, All That Heaven Allows. Like, mm-hmm. you know, not very many people were supportive of it. Just, like, it was a weird combo that they had going on. Mm-hmm. And actually, Marilyn Monroe was in love with this dude.
Oh, gross.
Well, she really liked him. And so when Jane married him, a lot of people were saying that it caused Jane and Marilyn to, like, have a, I don't know, a feud of sorts. Again, I don't really, like, go into it, you know? And I don't want to paint Marilyn as a bad person. That's not my place.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, I don't know. I think that's interesting that, like, Jane Wyman and Marilyn Monroe, out of all people, like, are getting angry at each other over a man. That's not expected.
Nope.
Yeah, so she divorced Fred. I don't know why. No idea. And then she actually, she divorced him in 1955, so they were married for 3 years. And then Jane went on her own thing. She did her movies. She was kind of thinking about retiring, whatever. And then she married him again.
Again.
Why? I don't know. She married him in 1961, and then they divorced again in 1965. And that was that for her. I think she gave up.
Yeah, I would think that she would have given up on marriage at that point.
I think she really liked him because he was a musical dude, and she loved music. She loved to sing. It was her favorite thing. And a lot of people don't know that about Jane, is that she was a very talented singer. Mm-hmm. I'm totally biased in this, but she had some pipes. Come on now.
Yeah, I've heard her sing. She's good.
Look it up on YouTube, y'all. She's so good. She's so cute.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people, too, like, that's why Jane didn't really have any, like, musical things under her belt. Like, she wanted to do musicals so bad. But a lot of the studio heads were like, we're not going to give you a musical role because your voice doesn't match your face.
Yeah.
How messed is that?
Oh, God.
Because she did have, like, a relatively deep-ish voice.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got, like, a cute little teeny tiny sunshine baby angel face, they're going to look at you, and if she opens her mouth and it's not, like, Snow White, they're like, what? What is that?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Bless her heart.
Bless her.
Yes, absolutely.
She's so cute.
Absolutely. I love her.
That's good. Hopefully with our little podcast interview thing, people will be more interested to give her a chance.
Yeah, absolutely.
My door is always open.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did she die?
Oh, man. She basically passed away from, like, diabetes complications.
Mm.
I think she was, she had type 1 diabetes.
Mm.
And, also arthritis. She had really bad arthritis. Mm. And she was, I mean, how old was she? She was 90. She was almost 91 years old when she died.
Wow.
So, a very long life. She moved to Palm Springs, and basically just lived the rest of her life there. She went to church like every week with her friend Loretta Young.
Uh-huh.
They were buddies. They went every Sunday. They had their little girl time. Went to church in Palm Springs, and you know, she hung out with all of her friends, and she retired from film acting actually in like 1969. And then when she did Falcon Crest, which was like her crazy soap opera show in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
that took a lot of convincing to get that lady back out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But after she did Falcon Crest, she was like, I'm done. I have given my time. I have done my part. And she just wanted to kick it. Mm. That's all she wanted to do.
She wanted to just sit on the porch.
One of my favorite things about like, older Jane that yes. I read about was she was an avid CD collector.
What?
I know. And she would, I think it was, they had cassettes or something at the time.
Yeah.
But she would literally sit in her car and play her own cassettes. She would literally just play her own music. Mm. And anytime she went to a restaurant,
mm-hmm.
she would request like her own songs. She did, her favorite song that she ever sang was with, Bing Crosby.
Uh-huh.
Here Comes the Groom.
Uh-huh.
And it's called In the Cool, Cool, Cool of the Evening. And it actually won, an Academy Award. And she was so, like, over the moon about it. She was like, yes, this is my shining moment as my singing career. We won't talk about Bing Crosby, but,
No, not at all.
She was pretty pumped about it. So anytime she would go to like a restaurant, like 8-year-old Jane Wyman was like, I want to listen to In the Cool, Cool, Cool of the Evening. And it never got old to her.
I stand so this. Cute. I stand this. I love it.
If I had a cool song that I liked, I would probably do that too.
Are any of her children still alive?
No. One of them I don't consider, but...
Oh. Michael?
So, Maureen, her biological daughter, actually passed away in 2001 from skin cancer.
Oh.
So that was very sad. And Michael Reagan is still alive. You know, I don't agree with him politically. I don't agree with... you know, some of the things he says and does. I don't feel like Jane would agree with that too.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I do have to be, I don't think I have to be considerate. I want to respect him in some way. Like, I wish I could talk to him and,
mm-hmm.
and maybe understand why he does what he does.
Yeah, for sure.
And maybe why he doesn't hold Jane's values, you know, or what made him follow his dad, or, you know, that kind of thing. Because I really do think that Jane wanted her kids to grow up and be respectful and, you know, be nice to everyone. And he's not certainly doing that up on Twitter. But
not on Twitter.
No.
For sure.
He's got a little bit of an attitude.
Oh, God.
So when she was close to passing away, I think she was quoted being like, I am going to go see my two girls. Like, I'm done.
Oh.
So she knew, you know. And she just never let go. Like,
yeah.
Losing a child. She literally thought about her daughters, like, for the rest of her life.
Mm. And you kind of have to, in a way, because you have to kind of think about it from her perspective.
Yeah. And when, an interesting fact about, her burial is that she was buried in a nun's habit. She had a full-on, like, nun getup. I mean, her last wishes... They literally just stuck her in a pine box and put her in nun clothing. I don't know what the term is or anything, but she really wanted to give her life to the man above.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, that was like a special thing too, because if you're married, you don't get to like wear the nun outfit.
Yeah.
But they like, there was some exception made, you know, so that's what she wanted. She just wanted a very simple burial. She wanted to be buried in the nun's habit, and that was her send-off. She is in Cathedral City. I would love to go see her.
How far is that from you?
That's very far. That's like 8 hours.
Mm.
8 or 9 hours. She's at the very bottom of California.
Oh, man.
One day yeah. I say it every year, and I never do it.
Well, I'm probably, because when I go to California next year, I was supposed to be in California this year, actually. Surprise, surprise. But you know what? Yeah. That never happened because of Miss Rona. Yeah, it's just not happening. But I was supposed to be in California this year, and I was supposed to go see Helen Parrish and, you know, Benny de Granville. Yeah. And I probably am going to make it my goal and duty to see Jane Wyman, because that woman... Please!
Girl.
Yes, ma'am! I was gonna ask if you wanted to go with me.
Yes.
We would go and we would just see Jane and we would just be like, you know what, Jane? You've had a long fight and you've fought a lot of battles, but listen, sis, yeah. I hope you're resting well.
That is so cute, Kate. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I usually, when I go and see graves, I usually kind of go, you know what? I know life was hard for you, but you know what? I hope you're resting well now, because, yeah. You know, you've done a lot.
I feel like seeing her, like, final resting place would be such an out-of-body experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be cool if you were there, too.
Oh, yeah. That'd be fun. I'll bring some flowers.
Let's plan it, girl.
I will, absolutely. Because I was trying to plan, you know, because I was actually, when I was going to come to California, I was like, I was going to contact you, I was going to contact some other friends and being like, hey, let's meet up and let's talk trash about the movie stars we don't like, and let's talk gossip about the ones we do like, and let's sip some wine.
I would love that.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Because
as soon as I was thinking about the episodes for this podcast, everyone's like, girl, you better get a Jane Wyman one. I said, Shay,
yeah.
Girl, please.
I just think it's so cool that, you know, you are one of those people, like, as soon as you get an idea, you run with it, and you're so passionate about everyone, and you're so supportive of everyone as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're doing with this podcast, like, I feel like everyone that has wanted an opportunity to have an hour to share with everyone and speak about who they really truly know about and want to share about, they have a platform, and you're supplying that, and I'm really appreciative, and it's really awesome what you're doing with this.
Thank you very much. And you know, it was so interesting because I actually, before we go, it's so funny, I kind of, when I started this podcast, I was like, I really want to do this to honor the people I know and love, and do mm-hmm. people that not many people know about, because yeah, there's Marilyn Monroe. I know I did an episode on James Dean. You know, of course there's always going to be the top people like Katharine Hepburn and James Dean and all those other people.
Yeah.
That's great. But I want to know about, like, Jane Wyman, Deanna Durbin, Benita Granville, Janet Gaynor. I want to know about the people who, if I say their names to you, you go, huh? Exactly.
Yeah, like, who is that?
Yeah.
Because and I think what also is interesting is that, like, the people that you mentioned, like James Dean and maybe, like, Audrey Hepburn,
mm-hmm.
not that their career was not successful and not that it wasn't great, but that's skimming the top, and there's so much more to it. And
mm-hmm.
I think especially with everyone, like the old Hollywood community or researching and all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
whether you call it research or not, these these people, these individuals that are doing the research are so passionate, and I think it's cool that kind of you associate certain people with their researcher. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because every time...
It's really cool that these podcasts are highlighting that. And everyone's hard work, too.
Yeah.
Like you can tell that everyone is just so passionate about it.
Yeah, because every time I think of Jane Wyman or I see Jane Wyman, I immediately think of you.
That's good. And I like that.
Yeah, I'm just like, Shay equals Jane Wyman. That's it. That's the tweet.
I love that. That's so cute.
Okay, you know what? I'm tweeting that.
Podcast.
I'm tweeting that. Shaybaleen equals...
Shaybaleen.
I love it. Shaybaleen equals Jane Wyman. I'm spelling her name like Wyman. I'm an idiot. I need to spell her name correctly. There we go. All right. Well, thank you for joining me on this episode of Movie Magic, and we'll see you next time.